Welcome in, Eagles Nation, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, available as always on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. What's up, Eagles Nation? Lou DiBiase here on the mic alongside Gino Camilleri for your Hack and Bull preview. Credits go to you, Gino, for calling that the Hack and Bull, as the typical Week 4 preseason game between the Eagles and Jets is tomorrow night, and I'm sure you're extremely excited about that.
Oh, I couldn't be more happy to watch Christian Hackenberg for probably three quarters of a game. Nothing excites me more, if you couldn't tell by my voice.
I don't think there's ever been a player that I don't want to say hated more, but just disliked as a prospect more than Hackenberg going into that draft. So, I mean, it will pique my interest because, again, Hackenberg, there's this like legend to him about how, I mean, he was a second round pick. He never saw the field with the Jets really almost ever. There was the stories, remember, of him being so inaccurate that he was hitting media members on the sideline. So I think it will be fun to see him play the majority of the game, though, right? I mean, because we'll get to see. This is really his last stand when it comes to a shot at the NFL, because if he can't do anything with this Eagles team tomorrow, I mean, it's pretty much done for him, right?
It makes it must-watch TV almost. I mean, how the mighty have fallen. He, coming out of high school, he was one of the top prospects that maybe ever. And then he went to college and just slowly but surely fell off, and then he got to the NFL. And I mean, can you really compare him to even – could you say Tim Tebow's better than him?
I mean, I would take Tim Tebow right now over Christian Hackenberg. So
it'll be interesting. I'm definitely interested, but not excited.
Yeah. There are some things to watch. I'm not excited either for Hackenberg. That's a good way to put it. Interested but not excited. So coming up on the show today, we're going to get into the Eagles-Jets Week 4 battle tomorrow. What Eagles players are on the bubble for this 53-man roster? Who needs to have a big game to get in? And who are still battling for some starting spots or some, you know, the last few roster spots that they're trying to prove to this Eagles team that they deserve to be on this roster? So we'll get into that. And then, Gino, today was randomly just one of those big NFL news days where, you know, it can go 3 months of just silence, and then suddenly it feels like, I remember thinking back to 2015, it was Jimmy Graham got traded from the Saints to the Seahawks, and then 5 minutes later, it was the Sam Bradford, Nick Foles trade, and then suddenly it was a huge day of NFL news, and I feel like that happens a lot in the league, and that was kind of the thing today was, with Michael Kendricks, Teddy Bridgewater, Aaron Rodgers, this was a big news day.
Yeah, for being the end of August, I would say so. You usually see these moves after that fourth preseason game, and you don't see too many high-profile moves like this. I would say you'd see more maybe a third guard for a defensive tackle type move. But yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers.
Like the Ravens trading that one reserve linebacker for a sixth-round pick yesterday.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Typical late August news.
Yep, I think you'll see some of that out of the Eagles too after this week with maybe a Chance Warmack. But yeah, I mean, getting to Aaron Rodgers, he deserves everything he got in that contract, really. I mean, he's one of the best quarterbacks ever to throw the football. Maybe the best thrower of the football, I would say. But, much deserved. And that's going to affect Carson's contract for sure. I can't even imagine that cap number of what Carson's going to get paid when he ends up signing that contract that we know he's going to get.
Right, absolutely. And let's get into that right now. Aaron Rodgers, six-year deal now, because he does have two years left on his current contract. He gets a four-year extension worth up to $174.8 million, almost $175 million.
Looks like
an NBA-type contract, and, I mean, he is worth it. You know, Aaron Rodgers, like you said, he might be the most talented thrower in NFL history. Is that fair to say?
Just look at that throw against the Cowboys in the postseason. That was arguably the greatest throw I've ever seen in my entire life.
Or not just that one, but the catch from on 4th and 25 in the back of his own end zone against the Cardinals in the playoffs Jeff Janis, and then the Hail Mary again. He's the only guy that's converted, what is it, 4 Hail Marys in his career?
It's something crazy.
It's incredible. So, yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he deserves to be the highest paid quarterback, and again, so there's 4 years added on to his current 2-year deal. He has up to $103 million guaranteed. Matt Ryan was, before him, the highest at $100 million. And Gino, this ties in with the Eagles because it makes you think about Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz is up for a extension, and, you know, the Eagles can technically still play through his contract this year and then pick up the fifth-year option next year. So then you have him. You can essentially pay him another 3 years as a. I mean, once you pick up that fifth-year option, you have to pay him top 10 quarterback money, but it still wouldn't be to the level of where, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan just got paid. But to me, I don't know what you're thinking. They're probably going to push to get an extension done sooner rather than later, because the more the different quarterbacks get paid, it's just the higher the inflation goes up, the bigger these contracts get, and eventually, you know, because you're going to top that. That's really the new way of contracts in the NFL, especially with quarterbacks, is, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo gets paid, and then, you know, another Aaron Rodgers gets paid higher. It's just whoever, they really just compare it to the last deal for, if you recognize you have a franchise quarterback, they're basically going to be the next team to pay the quarterback as the highest paid player in football. So it seems like the Eagles are going to probably go down that route too, and Carson Wentz, if he plays, you know, at least, I don't want to say if he starts all 16 games this year, but if he plays the majority of the games, he leads this Eagles team to the playoffs, and he looks close to the same as he did in 2017, he's going to get his contract. And it just makes you wonder, because that's a lot of money that a team is paying one guy. And I know it's the quarterback position, I know you have to do it, but right when you look at the numbers, you're like, ouch, that is a lot of money.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, and on the other side of the football, you're paying Fletcher Cox, too. We know we have to re-sign Brandon Graham. All those corners are going to have to get paid at some point. It's going to be tough. I mean, I'm confident Howie can do it. He's been a magician with the cap in his tenure, I would say. It's going to be tough. I mean, it wouldn't be out of the realm to say that Carson could get $33 to $35 million a year.
No, I don't know if he'll top Aaron Rodgers' money, but he might get slotted right in between what Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers have, where he could get $101, $102 million guaranteed.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he's got to get more than Kirk Cousins, come on. But
right,
yeah,
100%.
Aaron Rodgers is a surefire Hall of Famer. I mean, Carson, I think he could be on that track to get there, but right now, I mean, when he's 26, 27 years old, when he signs that extension, I wouldn't put him quite there yet, but I could see him getting paid more than we've seen any other Eagles quarterback, and more than maybe 99% of the other quarterbacks ever to play in the National Football League.
Yeah, and the Eagles got to look. They got to keep drafting well, though. This is the thing that it makes you think, though, because it's not just the Aaron Rodgers contract. We see all these quarterbacks getting paid. You look back to Seattle when they paid Russell Wilson. How Seattle, that demise of the Seahawks came to be, it makes you think, and it makes you, I don't know, it makes me a little bit nervous that, you know, the Eagles have a similar situation to where they have this window now to win a championship. They have pieces at pretty much every position to make them a contender for what it seems like a long period of time. And the good thing is a lot of their core is locked up. Alshon Jeffrey just got his contract extension. Fletcher Cox, Lane Johnson, Zach Ertz, Brandon Brooks. All these guys, you know, still have a lot of years left on those contracts. And then you mentioned the corners. The Eagles have a nice balance right now of cheap talent that are young, that you drafted well, and they're big contributors on offense and defense. You know, you look at your running back core, you're not spending a lot of money on Jay Ajayi right now or Corey Clement, and we'll see what they do with Ajayi down the road as well. But the Eagles have that really nice balance right now of some high-end talent that's getting paid like that. But then you have even Carson Wentz, your quarterback, is, and thank God that they maxed out that window with paying a rookie quarterback, and they got a Super Bowl out of it. So, you know, even if they never win another one, they got that with Carson Wentz on the rookie deal. But the Eagles have that nice balance, and you just got to hope that they can continue to draft well, because then eventually, like you said, when Sidney Jones is up for a contract extension, when, you know, maybe they do decide they want to pay Darby, although I don't think that they're going to do that, but yet Jalen Mills is going to need a new deal, so is Sidney Jones. You got to hope that eventually they draft replacements for a Rodney McLeod or a Malcolm Jenkins or a Jason Peters, so eventually you're not keeping these, you're not being like Seattle where you're trying to hang on to everybody, you know, you're trying to just pay everybody, and then it puts you in salary cap hell, and it makes you lose a lot of players. And that's what you got to hope for the Eagles, is that they, Joe Douglas, unless he leaves eventually, Howie Roseman, at least though, in the scouting department, you hope that they can continue to add young, cheap talent so that these other positions you have to pay with, you know, Jordan Hicks too, the rising stars of the other positions, you got to pay them. Once the other guys come to the tail end of their career, you're not hanging on to those big contracts. But, you, I mean, it just goes to show you, especially when you pay the quarterback, drafting becomes so important.
Definitely, definitely. And I think that was Seattle's downfall, as we've talked about. I mean,
right.
You can look
they
at it.
So many different picks, right?
Oh, yeah. They missed out on a lot, and they were also paying so many – I mean, what, maybe six, seven guys, probably around half of the salary cap. I mean, you see that in the NHL with, like, teams like Pittsburgh and Chicago that they've had their core. They've been paying the top guys, but they've drafted well, which made them basically dynasties, and that's what hurt Seattle. And I think Philadelphia has the ability to do that, and I think Howie – from learning under Joe Douglas these past couple years has made him a better evaluator of that talent, and I think Joe has exponentially made that scouting department better, and I'm thankful that he came into the organization, because who knows what Howie would have been as an evaluator. I mean, I'm just really thankful we have Joe right now, and he's definitely going to move on to be a general manager, as you can see what some of these general managers are doing, especially in Seattle, with how much money they just paid Tyler Lockett, that there is just some absolutely incapable general managers out there that are just screwing up NFL teams left and right. I think Joe has a place as a general manager, but that's for another day.
Let me just read to you some of the recent Seattle draft picks. Since let's go back to really when they started becoming the team that they were up until the past year, where they did make the playoffs. 2012, they picked Bruce Irvin, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, right? So they drilled that one. And it brought up that core that they won a ring with, almost nearly got another one. But after that, 2013, they don't have a first-round draft pick. They pick Christine Michael. The awakening. Never happened. Jordan Hill was their third-round pick. The best player they got out of that was Luke Wilson. So 2013 was a bust. They didn't have a first-round pick till 2016. I don't know if that can be right. I'm on Pro Football Reference, but it looks like it is.
It's wrong. Yeah,
no, they didn't have a first-round pick for three straight years. Where were their first-round picks? That is crazy, but Christine Michael was that 2013 class they missed on. 2014, they took Paul Richardson in the second round. That's it. I'm looking down the line. They didn't have one real big contributor. 2015, Frank Clark was their top pick, then Tyler Lockett, who they just gave an extension. But did you think Tyler Lockett was worth the money he got? I don't think so, especially with
$12.5 million a year. Absolutely not.
Insane, especially with his injury history. That is a lot of money, and I know Odell Beckham.
More than a gadget player.
He's a deep threat, but there's nothing. I know Odell Beckham's contract and all the big guys, them getting paid even higher, it raises then the middle group, their contracts go up, it all gets inflated, so I understand that. But still, I mean, if you're going to invest in a receiver, Tyler Lockett, especially with Seattle's cap issues, they have to pay Russell Wilson again. His contract expires in 2019. It seems suspicious, but yeah, they missed in 2015. 2016, remember their first-round pick, Jermaine Afidi, the guard out of Texas A&M. That was a huge bust. C.J. Procise they got in the third round that year. And then Jaron Reed, the defensive tackle from Alabama, in the second. They haven't replaced the talent that they've lost through the draft. 2017, Malik McDowell. And then 2018, they go and they take Rashad Penny in the first round, which I know you were skeptical about that pick. Most people were very shocked. Penny was like my fourth or fifth running back. I thought Geis and Sony Michel were both better. So even if they were going to take a running back, I thought they picked the wrong one, but like I just went down the list, Seattle, they didn't have a lot of first-round picks, and when they had picks in day one and day two, they missed on them. So that's also the part here is, yeah, eventually you do have to pay the quarterback. It's not over when you pay the quarterback. You just gotta filter through the cheap talent that you bring in through the draft, because you can still pay other players. You're going to be able to pay Sidney Jones and Jordan Hicks, and if you want, Jay Ajayi. And, you know, your offensive linemen. But the other thing, too, is that then eventually, though, when the likes of a Zach Ertz gets older, that's why you drafted Dallas Goedert. And then eventually when Jason Peters goes, you know, when he retires, he's 35 years old, so it's only a matter of time, you have another tackle that's on a rookie deal that you can replace. It's not, you're not going to be able to pay everyone, so, but I mean, do you agree? Wentz will probably be right in the middle. I don't think he's going to surpass Aaron Rodgers' deal. I think he'll probably be slotted right in between around what Matt Ryan and Rodgers got.
I would say yes, but if he comes out and wins a Super Bowl this year, I wouldn't be shocked to see him be the highest paid quarterback of all
time.
That's fair.
I'm with you on that. All right, coming up next on the Locked On Eagles podcast, we will continue our news before we get into the Eagles-Jets preview in this week four of the preseason. Thank God the preseason's over, Gino. I've hit the wall with it, truthfully.
Yeah, I mean, we got just about 7 days till the first game. I'm ready.
The good thing is that we are only officially now. I mean, we're recording this at 9 o'clock at night on Wednesday. A couple hours, we're going to be officially a week away from Eagles football, so we don't have to wait as long as everybody else, which is awesome. It's the first time we've gotten to witness that, so that's cool.
It's the luxury of being the Super Bowl champions.
Damn right. There's many luxuries to it, and that's one of them. But let me talk to you guys today before we get to our next segment. Ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week, and the truth is I don't know who's going to win, but if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Who you're betting on is just as important who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, they're the best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game, live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy gurus out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. So join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer and visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, and you get paid. All right, welcome back, guys, to the show. Let's get into our second segment, and we're continuing with the crazy day of NFL news that, I mean, again, Aaron Rodgers gets paid his money, the bad man himself. I hate to quote Stephen A. Smith, Gino, but it's maybe the one thing Stephen A. Smith has been consistently right on is that Aaron Rodgers is one of the top, he's the top quarterback in the NFL. But let's get into some more news, and one player that won the Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles last year, a longtime linebacker with the team from 2012 up until 2017. Michael Kendricks has been charged with insider trading. The Cleveland Browns actually just released him before we started recording this podcast, so Kendricks could be facing a prison sentence. It's not good, Gino. He turned, what, $80,000 into around $1.2 million with this insider trading. It's not good for Michael Kendricks right now, and he just lost it with the Cleveland Browns, so they obviously know it's serious, and it's a crazy story considering. So you saw, I'm sure, the Hard Knocks scene where they showed the scouting report that he was talking about Halepuli Vaitai and Zach Ertz. What's funny is I got a text this morning that someone said Michael Kendricks getting punished for insider trading. I thought it's a funny joke because he's giving the scoop on inside the Eagles with Zach Ertz and Big V, but then in actuality he literally was part of an insider trading scheme. So it's a crazy story.
It's quite ironic, honestly.
It really is, and the Eagles fans are having a field day. Eagles, Philadelphia sports Twitter continues to be the biggest trolls in sports media.
Hey, it's the passion for the team, you know?
Love it.
You don't come at our guys, you know? I mean, he was just doing his job. I don't take offense to anything that he does. That happens in the NFL every day.
He wasn't wrong, right? Big V, what he said about Big V is true.
I mean, you've
seen
it this preseason.
And Zach Ertz hates the block, right? Like, that's not...
That was his big snot coming out of college. I mean, that's completely right, and that happens in the NFL every single day. I mean, look at when DeMarco Murray came to the Eagles. He was calling out Dallas's plays from the sidelines. Like, that stuff happens. And to not think that it happens is just completely ignorant. I didn't take any offense to anything he says. I just think life comes at you fast, and that was pretty ironic that he was giving, quote-unquote, insider trading on the Eagles.
Yeah.
And then he prosecuted by the SEC for insider trading. Wow, what a roller coaster that 24 hours was.
That's a turn in just 24 hours. So Michael Kendricks, again, charged with insider trading. We'll see what happens with that. We'll keep looking at the story, but not much else to say with that. Not a great thing. You do wonder, Nick Fiero, actually, of the Lansdale Times in Pennsylvania, even he was speculating on Twitter. I don't want to get too into it, but he's wondering, you know, Michael, how this went down was... Michael Kendricks started doing this with a friend of his in 2014, 2015. So he was with the Eagles in Philadelphia. You wonder if any other Eagles players were involved in this, any former Eagles. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate because, I mean, I have no idea where to even start with that. I'm not going to start guessing who maybe could have been in it. But there were some people on Twitter speculating if maybe Michael Kendricks wasn't the only person doing this in the locker room with the team. It makes you wonder, but it's a crazy story. This is a white-collar crime that you don't normally see in the NFL, right? I mean, this is not something that's... I mean, this is a very unique story in football.
Yeah, it's not something you see every day, definitely. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure the Browns owner also got charged for insider trading but never went to jail for it. So that's – the irony just keeps adding on there. But, yeah,
I saw one tweet that said when Michael used to discuss this with the team that he kept it under lock, like lock and key pretty tight. So
it's probably
who knows?
Just
I mean, a lot of speculation. Yeah, but I'm not too concerned about it. We got our own problems to worry about coming up. But,
absolutely.
Yeah, stinks for him, but, hey. Picked his own battles.
So if you're just listening, tuning into the podcast tonight, Michael Kendricks was just officially released by the Cleveland Browns. So the Browns still got a deep linebacker core. They should be okay. But yeah, crazy 24 hours for Michael Kendricks. And then the last story from the NFL today before we get into our Eagles-Jets preview is Teddy Bridgewater getting traded to the Saints. Gino, you and anyone that follows me on Twitter, at DBSCLOE, shameless plug, knows that I am a huge, huge fan of Teddy Bridgewater. I have been since his days at Louisville. A couple years before he was even, it was his draft class, I was big on Teddy Bridgewater, and he's a player that even when he got injured, I really hoped he would come back, and he did with the Jets this year after signing a one-year small deal with the Jets. He played really well in the preseason. They drafted Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold showed some good things in the preseason as well. They wanted to go with their rookie. They already knew he was the answer. So they end up trading Bridgewater to the Jets for a third-round pick. Or to the Saints.
To the Saints.
Yes, thank you. For a third-round pick. Takeaways from this is really interesting. My biggest one is that with how much I like Bridgewater, if he ends up signing, and it's a risk because he's a free agent next year, but if he re-ups with New Orleans after this year, I think the Eagles and Saints are going to be battling each other on top of the NFC for quite some time.
Definitely. I mean, when he was at Louisville, I saw him play in that bowl game against Florida, and he made one throw where he stood in the pocket, got his helmet completely knocked off.
I remember that. I thought that was the hit you were talking about.
Yeah, we discussed this the other day, yeah. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I started referring, me and one of my good friends started referring to him as the truth, because I haven't seen many throws like Teddy has made. I'm still a big fan of Teddy. I mean, I think he could have took that Minnesota team far if he didn't get injured that year. And I think it would be smart for him to re-sign. Like, that would make total sense because Breeze is gone in 2 years.
It's a great situation.
Yeah, and then, I mean, he can also capitalize if Breeze goes down this year. He comes out like Nick Foles, has an impressive show, and he can cash out in the offseason. I really think it's a no-lose situation for the kid, and I'm happy for the situation he got to come into with Sean Payton, because I thought Lamar Jackson, when they traded up, was going to go there and be under Sean Payton, who's a great QB whisperer, but now it's Teddy, and you're going to learn under Drew Brees. I think that's a very good place for him to be, and I'm happy for him. But I'm also happy that the Saints keep trading away all their draft picks, because that'll make their window go down. So
that's
keep sending
point.
Them out the window.
That's a good point. I mean, I like the move for the Saints. I think it is a risk. To make an NBA reference, it's a Paul George OKC type move where they're giving up a good amount. I mean, a third-round pick, like you said, considering they don't have a first next year because they went to get Marcus Davenport. Now they don't have a third because they got Teddy Bridgewater. It's a risk considering he's a free agent next year, and if Drew Brees decides, maybe they get super close again. Maybe they make it to the NFC Championship game this year, or they lose in the Super Bowl, and Drew Brees wants to give it one more go, and it's another 2 years before Bridgewater can play, because remember, he's been out already for 2 years, so is Teddy Bridgewater going to want to go 4 straight years without playing football? I don't know. He's a free agent next year. He could choose where he wants to go. But then again, this is a great situation for him. He's in a great offense with Sean Payton, scheme-wise. He has young talent there. A bona fide number one wide receiver, Michael Thomas, who's only coming into his third year. Alvin Kamara is a future star at running back. They don't have a lot of draft picks now, but realistically, the youth of that defense, they have Marcus Williams and Marshawn Lattimore in the secondary. If Davenport is what they think he's going to be, although he's a very raw prospect as an edge rusher, you had him with Cameron Jordan. That's a team that, again, I think them and the Eagles have the most talented core of stars on that team. And I think they're going to, even with Bridgewater on that team, I would still probably pick them to make the NFC Championship game this year. I think Bridgewater's that good, and I think he could be that good with the Saints. It is a risk, however, though. I mean, they got to hope he comes there. He loves playing in that offense. He loves playing for Sean Payton. And maybe, too, who knows? Maybe this says something about Drew Brees. Maybe the Saints know that this could be Drew Brees' last year, and they finally decided to address their quarterback position when it comes to bringing in a young guy that they can potentially be the future? Because you've always been wondering, when is it that they're going to address that and try to bring in the next guy after Breeze? Each year you think maybe they'll, I mean, we thought this year, maybe they'll draft Lamar Jackson. They drafted Garrett Grayson a couple years ago, but there's been speculation every year since then that, moo, maybe this is the year the Saints get a guy in the first or second round to be that, the Jimmy Garoppolo to the Tom Brady, even though that didn't work out, you know, that kind of thing. And it seems like, though, that's what the Saints want for Teddy Bridgewater. I don't think this is just a, we're bringing in a backup, considering they gave up a third-round pick for him.
Definitely. I mean, that's a high asset to get rid of. And
yeah,
I think it would be smart, and I don't think there's any internal organization stuff that was going on, like, in New England with Robert Kraft going after Belichick because of Brady, yada, yada. We all know how that ended up. But
I think Sean Payton got his way and got his heir to the throne, dare I say, to Drew Brees. And I texted you that today, that I was really worried about this move.
I am too.
Like you said, I think it's going to be it's going to work out for everybody involved, really, besides NFC East teams. I mean NFC teams.
I mean, me as an NFL fan, I'm going to enjoy watching that team, especially as a Teddy Bridgewater fan. But as an Eagles media member and as an Eagles fan, that's a team that worries me now. I'm more concerned about them than any other team in the NFC, not just for this year now, but for maybe the next 4 to 5 years, if they can keep Teddy Bridgewater. Remember, he is a free agent, though. This is still a risk. They got to convince him to stay, especially if Drew Brees doesn't retire. I don't know. What if Tom Brady decides to hang it up this year? Say the Patriots win the Super Bowl this year and Brady hangs it up, and the Patriots say, we're going to pay Teddy Bridgewater to be our guy, or a team like Denver decides to do it, or, I don't know, a team, you know, a Chargers team, or eventually someone else moves out that needs a quarterback, or maybe, let's say, the New York Giants, right? They eventually move on from Eli Manning, and Bridgewater goes to play with Odell and Saquon. So there are options, potentially, for Bridgewater
Pittsburgh
next year.
Too.
Pittsburgh as well.
Don't forget about Roethlisberger.
Right.
He said the R word. He said retire.
Yeah, he says it every year, which sometimes maybe I think he just does it for attention, but Mason Rudolph lit a fire under him this year, but maybe after this year, Big Ben decides to hang it up, and Teddy Bridgewater's like, I'm going to go play with Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. I'm not going to say Le'Veon Bell, because I don't think he's going to be there next year, but nonetheless, so the Saints are an awesome situation for him, and they have everything he could possibly want with a head coach, with an offensive mind like Sean Payton, again, with a Michael Thomas and an Alvin Kamara. That's a great core to have if you're Bridgewater. I don't know if I'd really want to leave that. It is just tough for him, considering the injury. He's got to be itching to play. But again, Teddy Bridgewater traded to the New Orleans Saints from the Jets for a third-round pick. Gino, last thing on this, the Jets got lucky that they suddenly are a competent organization. Let me tell you why. Like, they're doing everything right now. I think the Darnold pick was good. Them bringing in Teddy Bridgewater, they virtually paid nothing for him. They gave him $1 million, and they ended up getting a third-round pick out of him just because he played well in the preseason. But they were very close to paying Kirk Cousins $60 million guaranteed. If he accepts that, none of this happens for the Jets. So I just want to scale back the Jets' love, because they kind of tripped into being this what seems like a competent organization this year.
Definitely. I think it's crazy that Teddy Bridgewater is like the butterfly effect of the NFL.
He is. That, I mean, he's the reason we won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he is. And then he goes to the Jets, and now they get a third-round pick out of him, and they might draft somebody, or they might not draft somebody that works out, but then the Saints are down a draft pick, and they might have a future quarterback. It's just how things can change in the blink of an eye is just wild, and that's the fun of the NFL, really.
And this ties in with the Eagles, too, because it's a copycat league, and the Eagles continuing to invest in quarterbacks, paying Bradford and Chase Daniel, moving up for Carson Wentz, developing Nate Sudfeld, you know, bringing in Nick Foles. The Jets did that with Bridgewater. They end up getting a pick out of it, and the Saints are doing the same thing as the Eagles, where they're bringing in a very high-end backup that could potentially be their starter, and if they lose Drew Brees, they're not screwed for the season. They could still potentially win a Lombardi trophy. It's a copycat league, and you see it right now with the Eagles. Other teams are investing in the quarterback position with more than just the starter, and that's what we're seeing with this trade, is both sides are taking a page out of the Eagles' playbook when it comes to addressing the quarterback position.
Until you see a developmental league, I think this trend is only going to continue. I mean, like you saw last year, in the blink of an eye, your franchise quarterback could go down, as we saw in Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. You need to develop that talent, because there's no minor leagues like the NHL and the NBA and the MLB, which is kind of crazy, because
the NFL could make a ton more money off of that, but that's a discussion for another day. But you have to develop in-house. You really do. And if you see an asset for undervalue that you think you can get and develop, you got to take advantage of it. I mean, Nate Sudfeld could be your heir apparent to the backup position for maybe the next 10 years, and you got him for literally nothing. You just keep developing talent. That's really what it is, and I think the Eagles are trendsetters in that ideal.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to our Hack and Bull preview coming up right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back, guys. We wrap up the show with our final segment. Let's get into a little bit of talk for tomorrow's game against the New York Jets with the Philadelphia Eagles, the classic Week 4 preseason game. Gito, I feel like these two have been playing each other for the past decade and a half in the Week 4 game, right? I mean, this is a
tradition. It's Groundhog Day. It's literally Groundhog Day.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's not just them. I know the Bills and the Lions play every year Week 4. It's kind of a tradition for teams in the preseason. I wish it didn't have to be a tradition. I wish there wasn't a Week 4 in the preseason, because a whole month of this is just painful to watch. But there are still some things to watch for the Eagles at the bottom half of the roster. And what are some things you're looking for? Who's going to be the next Paul Turner? You know, the next Tim Tebow who threw 2 touchdowns in that Jets game? We thought he had the roster spot locked up. Chip Kelly ends up cutting him anyway. And Rashid Bailey comes to mind. Henry Josie, Paul Turner, like I mentioned.
Raheem Mostert. That was my guy. I thought he was on the team for sure.
Yeah. Who is going to be a player like that you think steps up for the Eagles against the Jets? I know we're both going to be keeping an eye on Hackenberg because it is the Hacken Bowl, but are there some other guys that you're keeping an eye on?
I think that 6 wide receiver spot is really intriguing to me. I mean, you got your top 5, Alshon, Sheldon Gibson, Aguilar, Matt Collins, Mike Wallace. After that, it's a huge competition. I mean, I like what I've seen out of DeAndre Carter. I think he can take it. I would love to see him take over this game tomorrow and just dominate. Just take that position. Don't rely on Marcus Wheaton being your 6th guy. Don't rely on Kamar Aiken. Give a young kid a chance. I mean, Greg Ward, he's had his chances. I don't think he's going to capitalize yet again.
Yeah, disappointed in Greg Ward this season. I really thought
this was the year he
got
over the hump. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Rashard Davis, too. And any one of those guys could take it, or do they not? Does nobody dominate this game tomorrow? And
maybe they keep 5?
Walk away with 5 wide receivers, yeah. I doubt it with Alshon's situation, but in theory, if they were all healthy, if one of these guys doesn't step up, they only might keep 5, but I think Carter definitely makes the team.
Yeah, DeAndre Carter's the guy I'm watching as a pass catcher. Outside of that, I mean, if Greg Ward has a big day, Doug Peterson mentioned him a couple times through training camp as a guy that's impressed him. He mentioned that a lot during OTAs and early on in training camp. Him and Rasul Douglas were 2 guys he repeatedly brought up, but then eventually you have to produce in the preseason, and Greg Ward Jr., I don't know if he had more than 2 catches in the preseason. None of them were of real note to watch and be like, okay, this is a guy that's going to make the roster in Greg Ward. So DeAndre Carter's the guy that's really embraced it. He has made plays on the field. It wasn't just against Cleveland, but he made plays against the Patriots and the Steelers as well. So DeAndre Carter's someone to watch. A couple other battles we got to keep an eye on. The running back battle with Josh Adams and Smallwood wraps up tomorrow. It seems like it's a lock that Josh Adams is going to probably make this roster. But if Wendell Smallwood has a huge day against the Jets, I could still see him making the team.
I would bet he still averages 3.5 yards carry.
I would
but
probably agree
just
with
a hunch. Yeah, I would like
especially
to see Adams
no
come out.
First team offensive line, right?
Yeah, it's not going to be pretty. I mean, I think Adams has it locked up as well. I mean, Smallwood, can he do anything in the return game tomorrow that might get him a chance to make the team? We'll see. I mean, I'm big on Adams. We've discussed this plenty of times. They gave him that guaranteed money for a reason. I think he's a Joe Douglas and a Howie guy, and I think that's going to give him the edge over Wendell.
How about for safeties, Jeremy Reeves and Trey Sullivan? Does Reeves still have a shot here?
I think he does. I mean, let's shift this discussion to the cornerback position. I mean, do you just stick with 5, as we said, in the wide receiver position? Do you go Mills, Darby, Jones, Douglas, Maddox, and then say, let's keep 5 safeties?
I mean, because they're going to keep Maragos now, right? It looks like,
yeah, exactly.
Maragos and Corey Graham's a lock, and of course you have your 2 starters. So there's really maybe 1 spot unless... Do they... you don't think they would just keep four safeties, right? Are they're keeping, I think they're keeping at least one of Sullivan or Reeves.
Yeah, I would doubt that they keep four, because I mean, if one of the top two, McLeod or Jenkins, does go down, you're stuck in a rock and a hard place with either having to put Maragos out there or putting another cornerback, maybe. I don't even know what you would do at that point. You'd have to play a lot of base, really. Couldn't go into the nickel as much, but
I think they're going to keep six corners too, because I don't think they want to lose Bosby. I think he was competing for that nickel job all summer. He tailored off after a while. Maddox and Jones jumped him, but I think they'd rather have Bosby and try to stash Sullivan or more likely Reeves on the practice squad again this year.
Definitely. I mean, Bosby really hasn't impressed me as much as they said he was doing pretty well in training camp. I mean, he was going shot for shot at that nickel corner position until Maddox stepped up. Now it's between Sidney and Avante for who's going to start there, and we'll figure that out week one. But Bosby, if he can't really do anything on the outside, I wouldn't keep just a slot corner, really. I just couldn't see you investing a sixth roster spot for him, you know. But I think Reeves, with his special teams prowess, definitely offers more than Trey Sullivan or Bosby or any of the other mix of corners would.
I'm with you. If I had to keep one of any of those guys you mentioned, it would be Reeves. They do have to have a big game, though, against the Jets, so it might come down to if Bosby versus Reeves and Sullivan. Bosby's in this, too, because it might just come down to how many, like you said, how many corners versus how many safeties do they keep. A couple more before we wrap up the show. For me, a guy I know you're looking at, Geno, too, is Jordan Mailata. He's gained a lot of hype the past couple weeks. I think he's deserved it, and if he can keep Hackenberg up on his feet, to, of course, probably then again throw more interceptions. Nonetheless, if Jordan Mailata looks really good again against the Jets tomorrow, he's a lock to make the 53-man roster.
Definitely. People have been saying that he could just get snatched up if you even tried to put him on the practice squad.
He would not make the practice squad.
There's no chance.
Automatically.
You have to keep him. I mean, if you can develop a player within 3 weeks and see the leaps and bounds that he's already made, where is his ceiling? You really don't know.
You don't think a team like the Jets or the Bills would instantly scoop up Jordan Mailata? I mean, he would. Yeah, you're saying his ceiling is limitless. It seems like he could.
You really don't know how good he could
be. Yeah, he has that kind of talent, which is awesome. It's just this clean blank canvas for Jeff Stoutland to mold, and he has looked polished. There's been ups and downs, of course, with every rookie. There's going to be, especially for a 7th-round pick, but he's got starter potential, not just starter potential, but star potential in this league. So he is the other guy that I'm really looking forward to. Hey, one dark horse from you before we go. Anyone else that you're watching, maybe in that fourth quarter, that second half, that is going to try to make that roster?
Bruce Hector is a guy that's really caught my eye as of late. I was impressed with him in that Cleveland game, and I mean, Vio and Qualls, have they really done anything to solidify that spot? I liked what Vio has done getting pressure-wise, but he's not the most sound defensive tackle. Does a guy like Bruce Hector really impress that team tomorrow and make his way onto the team somehow, especially with the Jernigan injury? And maybe he's a guy you steal, and he's a healthy scratch on game days, but still a guy I'm definitely looking out for.
Absolutely. I think he is someone to keep an eye on for. And other guy to mention, tight end Anthony Denham. I think he's a player, too. I know people that have listened to the podcast heard me at one point pick Billy Brown even over Richard Rodgers. Billy Brown at one point, he had zero reps against Cleveland. He's not even getting on the field. So if they're
That's
going
sad,
to keep
the fall
a
that
yeah,
he's
it
taken.
Is. Because he was a receiver in college. I liked his receiving ability. He looked like he was an improved blocker, but he didn't step up in training camp. So Anthony Denham, if they're going to keep a fourth tight end, he might be the guy, especially with Richard Rodgers dealing with injuries the past few weeks. But, Gino, that's going to do it for us today on the show. We'll be back tomorrow to give our AFC predictions as we continue Predictions Weekend. We are officially now, we're 2 hours away from it being Thursday. We're 7 days away from the Eagles playing the Atlanta Falcons. I'm so pumped.
Yeah, we're on the road to the repeat.
Absolutely.
Get that trending as well, as along with Hack and Bowl.
Hack and Bowl and road to the repeat. Gino just keeps coming up with hashtags. And you heard it here first on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Follow us on Twitter at DiBiaseLOE and at Gino_LOE. Subscribe to the pod. We'll see you tomorrow. And let's go, Birds.
Go, Birds.